Hi, this is Bill with Kosiaba Fitness, and today my guest is the most prolific writer and most knowledgeable authority in the bodybuilding and fitness world on how to get lean and stay lean and be healthy and fit and look incredible as a senior. That's kind of a term that people may or may not like, but this gentleman is 76 years old. He's in phenomenal condition. He was the first person, to my knowledge, to get his body fat level down to, I believe, 2.4%. And he wrote his first book documenting that back in 1980. Now, 34 years later, we're looking at his 10th book. And he's still in fantastic shape. And I have to tell you, when he sent a couple photos to me, my wife looked at them. And the first thing she said, and my wife, I love her to death, but sometimes she speaks without thinking. She looked at his picture and said, "Why don't you look like that?" I wish I did, but obviously I'm not as deliberate and determined and dedicated as this gentleman. My guest today, Clarence Bass.
Thank you very much for the absolute spectacular introduction. I hope I can live up to that.
Well, you've more than lived up to that over the years. I'll be honest with you. I became reaware of you because of the interview that you recently did with Mike Mahler. And I really enjoyed that interview. And I went, wow, let's contact him. He is one of the most articulate people that I've heard in any fitness-related podcast. And he has a lot of good information. Now, I read Ripped, your first book, back in 1980. A gentleman that we both know in the industry was kind enough to hand me a copy of the manuscript, and I read it, and quite honestly, I read it through the eyes of a 20-year-old musclehead, and I found it boring. I went, there's nothing exciting in here. It's just facts and figures. I reread it a few years later, and I went, there's lots of facts and figures. It's not a comic book. This is a fantastic book. And, well, let's just start with Ripped. What possessed you to decide to write Ripped?
Well, it starts in 1977 when I got a call from Loveless Medical Center. It's a big medical complex here in Albuquerque, and they were doing some of the original research for the astronauts, trying to figure out what was the best type of exercise to help them tolerate weightlessness in space. And they called me as someone who primarily did weight training, and they were just out of the blue, and I went up there. They did a lot of things that I didn't know what they were doing, but two things they did that I absolutely knew what they were doing. They put me on the bicycle and ran me to exhaustion, and I think they were surprised that I did as well as Billy Mills, who was the 10,000 meter Olympic champion. I stayed on the bicycle as long as he did. It was better for him because I weighed more. But anyway, it got their attention. And when I was up there, I noticed that they had a hydrostatic weighing tank for weighing people underwater. And I told them that I was thinking about entering the Past 40 Mr. America contest when I turned 40, and that it would be helpful to know my body fat. And Dr. Luft, who was the head guy up there, he said, fine, and we'll just make an appointment a couple of or so weeks later. I went up there, and my body fat was 2.4%, which I didn't understand percentage and all that, and I know what, you know, what's the big deal, but he sat down and explained to me that that's a very big deal, that the average person my age has a body fat of about 25%, and somebody very fit is it's about 10%. Most marathon runners are about 6%, and here I was 2.4%. So I knew that I really had something going there, and I better try to learn more about that. And I continued to get weighed underwater up at Loveless as I prepared for the Past 40 Mr. America. I must have been weighed 15 or 20 times, and those are the results that you saw there in the first book, Ripped, which I think gave it a credibility that no other book at the time had, because not was I only just saying that here's what I did, but I had a body composition to show what the results were. And I also talked about things that I had done wrong and how I changed, and then what the body composition test showed about that. And I won the short class in the Fast Forwarding Mr. America, and the next year I won my class again, but this time I won the overall award for the most muscular man, best abs and best legs. And it was those contests plus the body composition testing results that went into that book. And after I completed the book, I sent it to Bill Reynolds, who was the editor-in-chief at Muscle and Fitness Magazine at the time, somebody that had photographed me and that I knew well, because I thought he'd be a good judge, because he published at least 10 bodybuilding books. And I know this is long, but it's a good story. So he called me back a couple of days later, and he said, I got your book. I said, I stayed up all night reading it. He said, it's the best thing I've ever seen of this type. He said, I want you to come out and talk to Joe Weider. Talk to Joe Weider. So I went out and talked to Joe Weider, and that's what led to my 16 years of writing the column in Muscle and Fitness magazine. But that's how the book came about, and it was a tremendous success. It was a self-published book, which of course makes things harder, but being in Muscle and Fitness magazine gave me an exposure literally to the whole world. So when that book came out, we had it advertised there, and believe it or not, that book is now, we're just going to get take shipment of the 12th printing. So the book has just been a runaway bestseller. I think it's fair to call it a bodybuilding classic. So it was really a wonderful start.
No, that wasn't a long answer. Trust me, I've gotten longer answers from other people and much less interesting. No, it's a good, accurate, the book, like I say, the second time I read it, I went, this is just so simple and so logical. It all makes perfect sense. When I read it the first time, I read it through the eyes of a musclehead who read the comic books, you know, blasting Joe's arms, and there were no secrets. And I guess the biggest secret is there are no secrets.
One thing that I talked about in there, which I think set the book apart, was I talked about my experience with steroids. And I showed the body composition results from taking the steroids. I also, importantly, showed the body composition results when you stop taking the steroids. So it's this up and down process, and when you stop taking it, your body stops producing testosterone on its own, and there's this gap where you have very low testosterone, and during the course of that, you lose most or all of the muscle that you gained, and so you end up fatter than you were when you started out. And it was pretty clear to me that in terms of a long time, lifetime fitness, that steroids are certainly not the way to go. And I thought that I stated that pretty clearly in the book, even though people still misread it and think that I'm recommending steroids. I think that's the most documented, unjudgmental illustration of why steroids are not the way to go of any book. And I think people liked the fact that I was honest about that and came right out and told about my experience, and that it wasn't something that should be repeated.
Well, you know, at that time, that was a subject that nobody really would talk about. And you'd see articles that were melodramatic horror stories about people dying, and you'd read the articles and go, okay, it's just drama. But again, you presented it in a simple, factual way. Yes, it reduced your body fat. Yes, it increased your lean muscle mass. But it was a short-term thing. It was not, as you say, a long-term, lifetime improvement. So I guess if your only goal is to get in great shape for the show, that's one thing. But if you're looking to be healthy and you're in it for the long haul, it's a very different thing.
The interesting aftermath is if you go on my website, you can see photos of me from 15 through 76. And if you look at those photos, I think it's very hard to tell the difference between how I looked when I won that contest and how I looked at 60 or even at 70. So I think I proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that you don't have to take steroids to look really fantastic and be very lean and very muscular, and not only just when you're young, but when you're old. So I think it makes what I've done even more powerful, than, even though that wasn't the intent, but it makes what I've done more powerful and impressive than if I hadn't written about that in the first place, because here we have the basis of comparison. The photos are right there. You can look at age 40, age 50, age 60, 65, 70, 75, the latest picture being age 76, which is what I am now.
Well, a friend of mine looked at the book and looked at some of the photos on your website, and so did my wife, and they both said pretty much the same thing. The only thing that belies your age is your facial features. They're obviously not a 25-year-old man, but the body at 75, 76 looks better than, I'd say, most 40-year-olds walking around today.
It looks a heck of a lot better than those walking around, or better than the bodybuilders.
Yeah, well, let's not even talk about what the bodybuilders look like now. They're out of control. They look ridiculous.
That's a whole different story. You're right.
Yeah. I was a huge fan of symmetry and proportion and the Frank Zane, and even going back further, but, you know, where you had taper to the body and where you had shape. Now it's all about just getting as massive as possible, and I don't think these guys can even tie their own shoes.
Well, it's only appealing to a certain group of people. The new contest categories, with the guys that are wearing their knee pants. I don't know what category they call that in. But
they call it physique. Wasn't physique...
Those categories, I think, has brought a lot more people back into the bodybuilding competition, so that's probably a good thing.
Well, those guys that compete in what they now call a physique contest, which I think is interesting because when you were competing and when I was promoting, a bodybuilding contest was called a physique contest. But now physique is, yes, the long shorts, and I believe they wear sneakers on stage, and it's purely about the upper body. But guys that were winning competitions back in your day in bodybuilding would be perfectly suited for this type of competition because they're going for symmetry, they're going for leanness, they're going for proportion rather than just monstrous size. So yes, it's brought it back to the mainstream, and I recently had lunch with our mutual friend Peter Potter, and I asked him, where did this come from? And that was his answer. We wanted to appeal to the public a little bit more again.
Well, it's the same thing with the women having those categories, and it probably helped them even more than the men.
I'm sure that's true. Let's get back to Clarence, though. Since you brought up the subject of steroids, one of the most popular subjects these days is hormone replacement therapy. You see commercials on television about testosterone replacement, growth hormone, peptides, testosterone replacement is very, very common. Virtually any physician these days will offer a male over 40 or over 50 whose testosterone levels are dipping a little bit, testosterone. You've done so much research. What are your views on hormone replacement therapy?
I've written a number of articles about the testosterone replacement therapy on our website, and I hold myself out as an example of what can be done without steroids or without testosterone. And I go to the Cooper Clinic in Dallas. They're a I call them they call themselves the world's leading proponent of preventive medicine. So I've had my body have my testosterone checked over the years, and for the normal person, it's expected that your testosterone is going to go down each year, but mine has not gone down, at least in the last 15 years. So I use that as an example, and of course I use my photos and my condition. And also there's been some recent research coming out showing that people that take testosterone are more likely to have heart attacks. I wrote about those too. So I think there's more pushback, and I don't think it's true that every doctor will offer the testosterone. I think probably more than half of them will not, unless you actually have a reading that is below normal, down below 200. And there certainly are some cases where it is appropriate to prescribe and take testosterone. It will help people, but just taking it for looks is generally frowned upon. There's been some doctors that have made, I think, literally millions of dollars by pushing that, and it's very expensive to take that and take HGH and some of the other things that they do, and they do have some spectacular results. But I think that my results are every bit as good without the testosterone, so I'm throwing book against using myself as the guinea pig. And I think my articles have been relatively well received. I haven't heard anybody complaining.
I'm curious, do you happen to know any of your numbers? Since I know you do check all these things on a very regular basis, if you'd be willing to share, I'd be curious about your testosterone level and maybe like cholesterol, HDL, triglycerides, some of those other numbers.
My testosterone is pretty much in the mid-range. I think it's about 545. I think the normal range is from about 200 to 880, something like that. I don't really know if they change the range with age. And I also talk about using the data that I get from the Cooper Clinic about my cholesterol and my triglycerides and all of that. In fact, I just wrote about the results of my latest visit to the Cooper Clinic just in the last few months. And actually, my cholesterol figures are spectacular. I do take a low dose statin, so that helps. The statin does help lower the LDL, the bad cholesterol, and mine is low. They want to compare the bad and the good. The reference range for HDL, which is the good cholesterol, the cholesterol that's thought to scrub the excess cholesterol out of your veins and just pass it out with your intestinal contents. And the reference range is from 40 to 70. Mine is 86. So the ratio between the HDL and the LDL is very good. It's rare that somebody has an HDL higher than an LDL. My total testosterone, I think, is 159. My triglycerides are, I don't know, about 60, but you can get all that stuff on the website. I've been talking about that and reporting on it for some time, but that 86, that was just out of sight, and I think it's mainly because I'm paying attention to eating the good fat. For a long time, we didn't know that it was important to have some fat in the diet. There's essential fatty acids that are required, but there's enough of that in most diets. The problem tends to be omega-3, which is found largely in fish. And I eat sardines with my breakfast every morning, and I did take a fish oil capsule, a couple of them. But I was not taking the fish oil capsule when I got that 86 reading. any other figures you're interested in. I pretty much
That was what I was looking for. Those are some impressive numbers. Your total cholesterol is 159, and I'm pretty proud of myself that mine's 165. So I got to work on it a little bit.
Both of those are good. What they want is ideally under 200, and for the LDL under 100. And I gave you the reference range for the HDL from about 40 to 70. The HDL apparently, and I wrote a whole article about HDL, and in fact it's up there in one of the latest articles on our website. And it's pretty much, and I explained pretty much the results of lifestyle, how you get your HDL up. That's why I was particularly proud of that. The LDL, I'm sure my statin helped, but I think just overall my healthy diet helped. But it was lifestyle and eating the right kind of diet that got my HDL up to 86. I've just finished writing an article about the heart and exercise, which we're going to post with our next update. That'll do. We update the first of every month, and I explain there the effect of exercise on the heart. Effective lifestyle, and one of the things that I talk about is that the testing at the Cooper Clinic, they have this very advanced testing where they can actually look at your coronary arteries and the bore, actually look right down the bore to tell how open and how big your coronary arteries are, and mine are very big, which I think is due to my lifestyle and my exercise. So that interesting. We have more and more things that they're using MRIs and things to measure, where they can actually, instead of just guessing the way these things were, they can actually look in there and see just how open your arteries are and a lot of other things that we didn't know before. So we can actually document changes as a result of diet and exercise and lifestyle and other things.
Well, it's technology is an amazing thing. You've mentioned your website several times, and I want to just go with a little aside here. I want to compliment you on how comfortable and accessible your website is to someone like myself who has to use screen reading software, somebody who cannot see your website. There are a lot of fitness websites on the internet that are cluttered with photographs and graphics and pop-ups, and they're difficult to maneuver for somebody who can't see. Your website is very simple, very concise, it's laid out in a very logical manner, and it's easy. And when it's easy, you're obviously much more motivated to stay there and read further. Whereas if you're having difficulty, you get disgusted and you go look somewhere else. So I'm a big fan of your website just based on the fact that it's easy to get around. You have a lot of good information right on your homepage. You don't have to hunt for it.
And I'm super delighted to hear that. A lot of people say our website is old-fashioned. But I like the fact that it's, as you say, it's easy to tell what's on the website and to find it. You don't have to search around. If you just scan down through the whole index page, everything that's on the website is right there. And you can just go right to it. So you don't have to, we don't have drop-down menus and so on. Maybe we should have some of those things. But I think what you said, that it's very simple. It's easy to get your arms around what's happening there. We have success stories. We have the articles in 10 different categories. As I told you, there's over 390 articles, 10 different categories. We have a Q&A category. We have a What's New category, where I will note this interview and give people the opportunity to listen to it. And I like it the way it is. People seem to want to change it, but we're resistant to it.
Do not change it. Do not change it. Your website kind of made me want to sit there and, all right, let's see what else he's got. Okay, this is good. Now let's see what else. It just,
It's a site that you're not going to get frustrated with. I love the fact that you make it as simple as can be for the most computer illiterate person on there, where it says to find what you're looking for, hit Control F and enter the subject, or go to Google and write Clarence Bass and the subject. You make it so simple that the most computer illiterate person, if they can't find it there, there's something wrong.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate that. You're the first person that has actually set it out in that way. And we try hard. We work very, very hard on those articles. As you found out, those are not just top-of-the-head articles. Those are researched and edited articles. So they're the best, clearest articles and information that we know how to put up there. And I work very hard on that every month. Frankly, I love doing it. It's a subject that I'm deeply interested in. And there are just more and more things to write about. I used to worry when I was doing the column at Muscle and Fitness that I wouldn't have anything to write about. The month would come up and I wouldn't have anything. But it's been all these years and that's never happened. You have to look, but the topics are out there. It's just a wonderful time to be alive because we're making so much progress. That's one of the things that made the new book possible.
Well, we're going to get to the new book in just a second, but I have to say I have this observation and this appreciation for your website because I just started my site. I don't know if you realize, but my site's only been up since the beginning of May, which is why there's not more information than what there is there. And quite honestly, if I did not have guest blog posts from people like Mike Mahler, and hopefully I can get you to write something for me in the future, there would be weeks where I just wouldn't have anything to put up, and sometimes it's just very hard. And the fine line of making the site attractive and interesting for people versus making it very accessible is another point of difficulty. The gentleman that's done the work for me on the site and I have gone back and forth about graphics and photographs, and he's telling me just information, 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 and I'm saying, but I want the site to look good. He said, if you've got a good information, people will come and people will continue to come, and your site is proof of that.
Well, boy, there's so much competition out there, you have to be good. I think you've got a good start explaining what you're about. I think it looks good. I think people look forward to, as you move along there.
Well, let's get to the new book. Loved it, quite honestly. The new book is called Take Charge. It is very recent. I'm not sure when did the book first come out?
It came out last year.
Okay, well, that's still considered new. And it has a lot of amazing information. The thing that I really enjoyed was looking through it, especially the earlier parts, talking about aerobic training, where you're talking about interval training and high intensity interval training being more beneficial than long, slow, steady state cardio. I felt very vindicated reading that because I didn't have the facts and the figures and the studies behind me, but I've always told people, get on the bike and do some sprints. Go run some sprints. No, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of jogging is not the way. And then I read your book and there it is with all the medical studies to prove it.
Yes, that was one of the reasons for writing that book. As you said, it's the 10th book, and I make it a point to have every book being a distinct standalone, not something that just repeats in a different way what I wrote before. So it had been 5 years since my last book, which was Great Expectations. And all of my books, as I said, the first book still sells, and they sell because there's standalone. Each one has a separate focus. And what motivated me to write this last book is all of the new things that were coming out. And so I sat down and looked at what I'd written about over the last 5 years, and it became quite clear that there certainly was enough material for a new book. But there were three areas, and one of them is what you just mentioned, that were brand new and that I thought I was pretty much on the cutting edge of, and we should talk about. And they all had the effect of opening up fitness training to more people than ever before, because they showed there were different paths to do it. There wasn't just a certain way, one way or the highway, so to speak, but you could look for the type of regimen and diet that appealed to you and that worked for you, because that's really the only thing you're going to keep doing. You're only going to eat a diet that you enjoy, and if you have a contest, maybe you can stay on a low-carb diet, but not for very long. So it's a long-term diet that counts. Also, the training. It's only the training that you enjoy and that you're willing to keep doing, and usually that's what you do well, and the book is focusing on the different ways to do that. One example is talking about effort-based training, and the idea is that it's not the poundage that you lift, but it's the effort that you put into the lift. So some people are turned off by the idea that they would have to lift heavy weights, particularly women. They say, I don't want to do that. But if they find that they can lift a lighter weight and do more reps, and as long as they go hard, they put some real effort into the last few reps, that they can build strength and muscle just as well as if they were lifting very heavy weights. And I explained the physiology behind that, and we can do that in a bit if you like, but I'd like to tick off these other two. The other is intervals, and what you mentioned, and it's the rise of intervals. You probably have heard about the Tabata protocol that came out about 1996. Dr. Tabata is a scientist from Japan, and he had speed skaters doing 20 seconds very hard and 10 seconds rest, repeating that 6 to 8 times. And he had them doing that 5 days a week over a 6-week period. And he compared it to other athletes doing a steady state, like you talked about, 70% of max for an hour. And it turned out that the intervals produced a 40% greater increase in VO2 max or aerobic fitness than the steady state. And it also produced a 28% increase in anaerobic fitness, that is pushing beyond the aerobic level where you're using mostly sugar. And the steady state did nothing for the aerobic or anaerobic benefit. It's because it doesn't use the fast twitch muscle fibers, which make up about half the muscle fibers in your body. And that was very hard. I mean, Dr. Tabata talked about his speed skaters being gasping for breath on the laying on the gym floor, and most people are just not going to do that. But I talked about the progression of intervals, the rise of intervals, getting it down to where you didn't have to do that hard to get really good results. They have something called submax intervals, and it's done along the same line as if you were doing a dumbbell curl. If you're going to do 12 reps, the first reps are easy. It's only the last, 10, 11, 12 that's really hard. So you can do your, Dr. Tabata had them doing all out for every interval. But you start out with the levels, I would say 60% of your max. And it's easy at the beginning, but after you get down to the near 10, it gets hard. So it's only the last few reps that are really hard. And the studies show that had a very good positive effect, and it's something that somebody's willing to do. When you see you only have to really put out to a maximum degree at the end of the line when you see the finish line, you're much more inclined to do it. And it comes back to the idea that you're only going to do things that you enjoy, and that you'll find it acceptable to keep doing. And the other thing, again, is relating to the benefits of sprints and things like that, and that's combination training. The idea has always been that strength training and aerobic training are like oil and water. They don't mix. And the thinking was that if you did those both on the same day, that would interfere with the stimulation, with the adaptation both ways. So they did a study where they had put athletes on a bicycle for an hour. That was one setup. The next setup was they had them put them on the bicycle for an hour, then they had them do six sets of hard leg presses. Now, they expected that the six sets of leg presses would interfere with the adaptation from the cycling. But as it turned out, it doubled the production of the mitochondria in the muscle. The mitochondria are the organelles in muscle cells that process the oxygen, which is what makes the energy. And it turned out that when they had these leg presses, that it actually doubled that, which was a big surprise because they had predicted it was going to be the other way. But again, it goes back to those fast twitch fibers, that the steady state is not using the fast twitch fibers, but the leg press brought in the fast twitch fibers. And when you build more muscles with the resistance training, there's mitochondria in that muscle as well. And one more study, and then I'll stop. But pursuing the same thing, they did another study where they had them do 40 minutes on the bicycle, the one workout. The next workout, they had them do 8 reps on the leg extension. And then and the next third category, they're resting between these regimens, of course. And they had them do half of the bicycle to cut it down to 20 minutes, had them do half of the leg press down to 4 sets. So they thought everything would be reduced by half. But it turned out they got the same results from cutting it in half and doing them together than they did when they're doing them individually. So they found that you could be much more efficient by combining your aerobic exercise and your strength exercise, that the aerobic contributes to the strength contributes to the endurance. So it's just a wonderful breakthrough. And again, it's this example of different ways to train, that if you don't like jogging, you don't have to jog. If you don't like lifting heavy weights, you don't have to lift heavy weights. If you don't like long, slow distance, you can do the intervals. The intervals is a much more efficient and I think more interesting and less time consuming than the other thing.
Well,
that was really a record. I'm sorry that was so long.
No, don't apologize. No, I'm going to take it down to a much more basic level. And what I always told people, and this is the thing about the sprints versus the distance, and I'm going to take it down to a much more basic level, cosmetics. Look at what a marathon runner looks like, and look at what a sprinter looks like. Sprinters are muscular. Sprinters have powerful legs and glutes and calves, and marathon runners, they're very slender. They show no appreciable muscle, and they honestly just don't look healthy.
Well, that's obviously, I talk about that in the book, but that's a very interesting point, because they're not using the marathon runners are not using their fast twitch muscle fibers. There's a section in the book called Bending the Aging Curve, and there's been studies done that what happens to your muscle fibers as you age. And by the time you get to be 60, your slow twitch fibers, the small fibers, that the endurance fibers, they continue on. They're pretty much flat for everybody. But it's the fast twitch fibers, that is the bigger fibers, the stronger fibers, at 60, they just start going down. But if you continue, so that's because they're not being trained, they're not being used. But if you're doing intervals, or you're doing combining aerobic exercise with strength training, you're continuing to train those fast twitch fibers. So the fast twitch fibers stay as well. It's very important that you look at your neuromuscular condition. That's the condition of your muscle fibers, because eventually, as you get older, as you get weaker, pretty soon you get where you know you can't go to the bathroom. You just lose your independence. So it's very important to train both the slow twitch and the fast twitch fibers, and this sprint or doing the intervals makes that possible.
So it's even more important as you get older is to incorporate some sort of strength training, some sort of resistance training to keep those fast twitch fibers growing, from diminishing rather.
Exactly, and building them bigger.
Let me go back to the heavy versus effort thing, and this is as much for me as anyone else for some clarification. Obviously, effort means focus and putting intensity into the effort, but when you're talking about a lightweight, and if I read it right in the book, you're talking about both muscle mass and strength improvements, but how light and how many repetitions are we talking about?
Well, I don't think you want to go crazy on the reps. After a while, you get a great number of reps. You're going to be using mostly the slow twitch fibers because they're the only ones that will keep going that period of time. I think generally somewhere between 6 and 20 is probably the range that you should stick with. They did something called forget the name of it right now, activation level studies to prove this. The activation level studies compares a voluntary muscle contraction with an electrically stimulated muscle contraction. And the electrical stimulation is considered to be 100% activation. And then they had people doing a 5-rep max, that is, a weight doing it that they could do for 5 reps. They had them doing a 10-rep max and a 20-rep max. And they measured this activation level, and it was the same for all three. It was about 95%. So that's showing that it's those muscle fibers are being contracted just as well with the lighter weight as they are with the heavier weight.
Okay.
You don't want to be ridiculous on how light you make the weight. You could do more reps if you wanted to, but generally, I think 6 to 20 is the best place to be.
Okay. Well, I really, as much for myself, I wanted clarification because I read that and I thought, now 10, 15 reps is about as high as I would ever go on anything. And you know, I'm thinking lightweight, lots and lots of reps. I could not see how 50 reps could possibly build size and strength. It would become an endurance thing. So I just really wanted, like I said, for myself as much as anything else, clarification on that.
Well, people would like doing 50 reps, as you're indicating. It's certainly not fun.
It would be very hard to maintain your focus on what you're doing.
That's right, absolutely. I never go over 20.
I think 20 is about as far. It takes a lot of focus to be able to do a 20-rep set and not let your mind wander, quite honestly.